Hi everyone, I'm Billy Ray.
And I'm Joe.
And we are the Boyfriends. And so we've just finished recording season 7, episode 23, which is the finale. So Joel, can you tell us why we're still here?
No.
No, you can't, because I told Joel to hang around so that we could just quickly have a little chat. So I imagine you remember a few days ago when I said, can you do me a favor and re-listen to season 1, episode 1 of our podcast?
Yes, I can.
Throwback.
Yes.
Well, the main reason is because I'm doing a little quick revisit recording thing just to give our fans a little something to tide them over while we take a break.
Okay.
So it's only half an hour, which is like, how did I manage to edit the episode down to half an hour every time without pulling my fucking hair out?
Yeah, I know.
And I will be playing that just after this bit. So I just quickly want to talk a little bit about what it was like to listen to our very first episode, pretty much for the first time in what I imagine for both of us was years.
Yes, I haven't listened to it since the first time it was uploaded. So 4 years ago.
The first thing that I want to mention from re-listening to this particular episode is I'm going to play a clip. This podcast is also going to be child friendly, or mostly. Swears will be very minimal and any accidental slips will be edited out. I just wanted to talk about the bit where during the beginning of the episode, I said, and this is going to be a child friendly episode and there is swearing. And if we do swear, it will be bleeped out.
That didn't last very long.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that because I remember saying to you before we recorded it that I don't think it should be child friendly.
We did a little duck sound effect every time we swore.
We did.
Iconic.
For me, more than B, because I swore a lot.
What did you think going back to this? Because I was listening to it and I thought, I mean, first of all, we only had the one microphone, which was such a pain because you were sniffing so much and I couldn't edit it out.
I probably had a cold.
I think you had a cold on like our first ever episode.
Yeah.
So the audio quality wasn't as good.
Audio quality was terrible.
I feel like I talk different.
Yeah, I know. I remember you saying, I don't really hear it.
But... Well, I was listening and I thought, why am I not enunciating my words properly? I guess it's just practice.
It is just practice and getting used to it, but I didn't really register it. But yeah, audio quality was really bad. I hated the fact that it was a 30-minute episode. Absolutely hated it.
I really thought it was quite short and sweet, but I just can't imagine what stuff was left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, I know.
But I thought it was a pretty solid episode.
It was a solid episode, don't get me wrong, it was really good. Like all of these people that have messaged me like over the, you know, recent year or so and been like, oh, I'm just thinking about getting into the podcast, like, or what have you, and I've always said, well, you know, give it a grace period or whatever, like the first few episodes are a bit rough. Actually, I don't think is necessarily true. I don't want to toot our own horns too much, but I actually thought for a first episode of a podcast, and we'd never made a podcast before or anything like that, wasn't too bad.
I think we definitely found our footing and I think our episodes are actually a lot better now.
Yeah,
but I was like, you know, this isn't too bad. I think it has its charm.
Oh, definitely. But you can tell it's early years.
Did we even have our segments at
no,
this
we
point?
Didn't
we didn't have the best parent worst parent
we didn't have best parent worst
best
parent.
Fashion
no oh no we had best outfit.
Did we actually
but
do that
was it. We didn't have a sting for it. And we did have a best outfit because I said when we were like talking about what we could do as a podcast and we start talking about Desperate Housewives, I said, I want to have an award for best outfit. And so we did that, but that was the only award we gave was best outfit. There was no worst outfit. No,
I didn't do best parent.
You didn't do best or worst parent.
Weird.
And so that obviously built up later and later and later, like as we went on through the podcast, but we definitely did best outfit.
Hmm. Oh, I hadn't even finished the show when we started recording.
No, but you hadn't even finished Desperate Housewives when we started filming the podcast.
I think we just really wanted to get our episodes out there because there wasn't a Desperate Housewives podcast at the time.
Yeah.
And so we were like, let's just get it out there now while I'm finishing. Because we were on the last season.
We were. We were very much on the last season.
So anyway, it's always fun to look back. It was fun for us to have a listen to the first episode and just sort of see how far we've come, how far the show's come.
Yeah.
So hopefully you will listen to season 1, episode 1, which we're just about to play right after this. And we're just taking a little break and we'll see you when we're back with season 8, episode 1.
Yeah. Bye, guys. Bye.
I'm Billy Ray.
And I'm Joel.
And you're listening to Tales from Wisteria Lane,
the podcast where we give a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives.
Hi, thank you for joining us on the podcast. As you may have heard, my name's Billy Ray.
I'm Joel.
So in this podcast, we're basically going to be doing an episode-by-episode review of Desperate Housewives, starting from the very first episode, pilot. So just to give you a little bit of info about us, I'm Billy Ray. I was a film, radio and TV student.
I'm Joel and I am studying business management and marketing.
And we're boyfriends, hence yes. Boyfriends Review. We have been together for nearly a year and Joel loves this show.
So much.
he started showing it to me when we first started dating, so nearly a year ago. We've got one more month at time of recording. We actually haven't finished it yet. We've got a few more episodes of the last season, so the entire first year of our relationship has basically been Desperate Housewives.
It has taken us 11 months to get through 8 seasons.
We've nearly finished it, and we've gone back to the beginning. So what we're going to do in this show is we're going to give you a bit of trivia, fun facts, research that we've got on an episode. We're going to take it in turns to give you that trivia. Since it's Joel's show, like this is one of Joel's favourite shows, he's going to give the trivia and fun facts for this episode. And then I'm going to do it for the next episode. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk through the events of the episode and just discuss things that we found interesting, go for it bit by bit. And hopefully if you're watching the episodes with us, you might see how things progress and change and grow with the characters.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into it. This podcast is also going to be child friendly, or mostly. Swears will be very minimal and any accidental slips will be edited out.
Ironically enough, the show itself is not suitable for children.
Not really. It's a bit dark.
It's a bit dark and they certainly don't bleep out any of the swear words.
Did you want to do any fun facts and stuff before we start talking about the episode?
I'll pop them up throughout, but I've got a couple of things that are about sort of like the creation of the series. From my research, Mark Cherry was inspired to create the series from his watching of the Andrea Yates murder trials, which I do want to have a look into. But he was watching that and he was fascinated with just how women led quiet lives of desperation. And so that's when he began writing the season, and that was in 2002. The season itself won 6 Emmys, and 3 of those Emmys were awarded for the pilot, so this very episode. And it also became the most watched episode of the week, coming in approximately 21.6 million viewers, which for 2004, I think it came out, is quite high.
Those are pretty solid viewings and awards for a pilot.
For a pilot. It was the most watched pilot of the season.
Yeah, that's pretty good for a pilot.
Right.
So that's your first little nugget of trivia. Right, let's get into the episode. This episode starts with something that kicks off the entire first season's plot, I think, if I remember correctly. So Mary Alice does her regular day-to-day stuff. She then grabs a gun from a box in a cupboard and shoots herself. Brenda Strong gives, I'd say, a pretty solid performance. It stays very much this exact same tone throughout. But that's pretty much how the show starts before we get the intro title sequence. What happens after she shoots herself is Mrs. Huber hears the sound, but Mary Alice says that she heard a pop sound. We then cut after the title sequence to Mary Alice narrating how all of the main cast came to the wake and brought food, and they all bring different types of food and cooked in different ways to kind of represent their characters. So it starts with her talking about Lynette. Lynette brings fried chicken to the wake, except she didn't actually make the fried chicken. She actually bought the fried chicken and then just brought it with her. It's explained that she's going up the corporate ladder. She's going up the corporate ladder. And then when Tom got her pregnant, Tom, her husband, he tries to get her to stay home, quit her job and be a house mom.
Yeah.
Which she does. And that's how we're introduced to Lynette. So we get the idea that she's a very smart sort of businesswoman, but she's now a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah, who also incidentally puts all of the boys of her children. She's got like 4 children, I think it is at this point. And all 3 of the boys are in the same outfit. And I don't get why parents do this.
I didn't even notice that.
Same. My mum did the same thing with me and my brother. They were these hideous multicoloured suits. I think I've probably still got the blazer somewhere from when I was 4 or 5 years old. Gross. And I don't get why parents do it.
We then cut to Gabby. So Gabby brings a spicy paella dish. And what she says about Gabby is that Gabby likes rich food and rich men. And what happens in this scene is Carlos is said to have cried when he proposed to her. But apparently he always cries whenever closing a big deal. And if that doesn't tell you everything about those two characters as well, I don't know what will. So Carlos is very much the bringing the money home kind of guy, very much the businessman, and Gabby likes the rich things.
Ultimate favourite from the get-go. Gabby walks out of that gorgeous yellow house at the end of the street, and she looks absolutely stunning with the way that she talks to Carlos about her, I'm just going to keep my butt pressed against the wall the entire time. Compromise. That is the marriage between Carlos and Gabby. It is compromise.
We then introduce to Bree in the most perfect way. So Bree brings a basket of homemade muffins. She actually spent the time making these muffins. And then we also hear that she makes her own clothes. She does her own garden. She reupholsters her own furniture. So apparently she has many talents, and she's fought around the neighborhood to be the perfect mum and the perfect wife by everyone except her family.
Cliche housewife right there. I mean, they're all pretty cliche in their own way, but Brie is the cliche one.
Yeah, she's the suburban housewife of the housewives.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Susan, and Mary Alice says that Susan brings macaroni and cheese, apparently the only thing that she knows how to cook right, although she hardly ever does it well. So she brings this meal that she knows how to cook. Well, the only meal she thinks that she knows how to cook. I remember watching her part and thinking that she seemed to have the least amount of personality out of the four so far.
No, I get that. From the get-go, her personality is pretty much her husband left her. She's sad about it.
Julie seems to have more personality. Julie being her daughter. Her young daughter, who...
14, maybe, at the time?
Susan's a very inappropriate mum.
Also, Susan is the only one out of the housewives that is a single parent. But at this point, Susan is the only one that is single out of them. And so I think that's supposed to be her thing. You know, Bree's the perfect homemaker. Gabby's the beautiful one. Lynette's the businesswoman. And Susan's single.
That her personality is that her daughter is smarter than she is more... what's the word?
Oh, you were about to say smarter than she is.
In a way, but what I meant was she's more, she seems to take care of Susan more than Susan takes care of her. That's their dynamic.
Yes, that is their dynamic.
So that's Susan and Julie. So that's how we get introduced to each character from the get-go. So that's the very first we learn of them. And then at the wake, we see them all sitting around sharing coffee. We get a flashback to when they would drink coffee with Mary Alice as well. And I think this sets up the dynamic really well between them. So just from this, we learn that this is what they do. You know, they have their coffee mornings together, or sit around, drink coffee and gossip. And that's their friendship.
It's the dream. I would love to be able to spend every single day living on the same street as my friends and sitting down and drinking coffee and gossiping about the husbands. We're stuck in lockdown at the moment in the UK, and I would love nothing more than to gossip about the husband.
I really miss having drinks with friends.
Those are the good scenes. Those are the good scenes in Desperate Housewives. It's the sitting around the table, gossiping about the men and complaining about the men. Ugh. But I would like to point out, it's really interesting introduction to all three of them. Or four, sorry. I said three, didn't I? All four of them. And my favourite has to probably be Lynette's, simply for the fact that she, from the get-go, blackmails her kids.
I get that. Lynette is my favourite of the four of them, but I think Brie has the best intro for me. I think it's the most revealing.
We've all got a housewife that we connect with, and mine's Gabby. I connect with Gabby on pretty much every single level.
I don't know if you noticed this as well, but I've got a little note here. So I was writing about how when they're at the wake, Lynette's kids are in the pool and she's telling them to get out of the pool and no one's listening. And I just wrote, everyone at the wake is so judgy when the kids don't listen to Lynette.
Yeah.
I just felt so bad because they're not listening to her. But
but Mrs. Huber's face. Mrs. Huber loved going up to Lynette and saying, do you know what your boys are doing? Like, she just loved it. The drama that she managed to dig up there.
This is the same woman who, as soon as she found out that Mary Alice was dead, she just, like, peeled off the sticker that was on the blender that she borrowed from Mary Alice and just put it in a cupboard, like, this is mine now.
I aspire to look on the bright side of things like Mrs. Huber. Her neighbour's dead, and her immediate thought is, oh, I can keep the blender.
I mean, so far, best character.
We get to Susan meeting Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Why does he have to spit the mac and cheese out into her hand?
Ew.
Could she not just give him the napkin?
The first meet cute of the season. The will they, won't they relationship of the entire season.
The Ross and Rachel of Desperate Housewives.
So yeah, they have their little meet cute. He tries her mac and cheese. He hates it, naturally. But she warned him not to.
Yeah, she did warn him not to.
After the wake, what happens is Julie throws a ball into Mike's back garden just so that she can go retrieve it and then get some information on him for Susan, which Susan didn't actually ask her to do, which I completely forgot and was really surprised. I thought that's something that Susan would ask her to do. I've wrote a note here that Susan and Julie have a really unusual relationship. Once she comes back and tells Susan about how Mike is single, she then asks Susan when the last time was that she had sex.
Yeah.
And Susan's not even annoyed or shocked that her daughter, who's like 12 years old, would ask her this. Mm. She was just like, no, I'm just trying to remember.
I wrote a couple of notes. First of all, props to Julie for being Susan's wingman. And how long has she been doing it? How long has she been Susan's wingman? Because she's out there trying to get her mum laid. Yeah, I can say that word.
That's fine.
I can say the word. Trying to get her mum laid, and she more credit needs to go to that girl. Also, Naughty's team fashion was really a choice with those butterfly clips. And this is where we differ when it comes to looking at things, which is why it's probably fun. B takes a look at things from a very media, university degree, film school kind of way. I look at the bad acting, the fashion, and all that stuff. So that's what you'll be getting from me, is lots of little comments like that.
What happens next is my favourite character of the show, Edie Britt. She meets Mike when Susan's talking to him, and Murray Alice describes Edie Britt as a slut. I wrote a note on this, and I very specifically wrote in capitals, "For shame, Mary Alice."
I wrote, "Bit problematic."
That hasn't aged very well.
No.
Women calling other women, anyone calling women sluts these days. Really? Yeah, it's not really cool nowadays.
I wrote a note about that as well, just in big capital letters, says, "Edie, arrow, neighbourhood slut." But I was more excited to see her. She originally auditioned for Brie.
Oh.
The minute she auditioned, she was basically told, "You're more of an ED." And I think her words were great. So I came in as an upstanding mother of two, and I leave a slut. Which, pretty much the case.
So after that, we meet John Rowland for the first time as well. So John Rowland is Gabby and Carlos's gardener.
Carlos and Gabby are having an argument because Carlos has got a meeting, and Gabby basically says that she doesn't want to go to it because every time she goes, Tanaka, who is Carlos's boss, tries to grab her butt. And Carlos is basically saying that she does what she needs to do to keep him happy.
That's what I wrote a note about. I said, Carlos is very willing to let men touch up his wife if it's good for business.
Yeah, she says that she's not happy, and then Carlos basically says that she needs to be quiet because he spent $15,000 on her diamond bracelet, and he's learning to live with it.
He then leaves the house, and he shouts at John Rowland, and he asks him a question, one of those rhetorical questions where, as soon as he starts to answer, he's like, "No, I don't want to hear excuses."
Yeah.
And then later, they are going to this party, and he says that the grass isn't mowed properly, so he's going to fire John Rowland.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Which is fair enough.
The reason the grass isn't mown properly is because after John cuts his finger, Gabby sends him inside, finishes a conversation with Carlos, and follows John, gives him a plaster, and then does him on the table.
Yep, they are having an affair.
So he doesn't get round to cutting the grass, basically, because their affair goes on for so long in the day. Also, she seems to enjoy her and John having their time together on really expensive things that Carlos has bought. So John was just like, "Oh, do you want to do it on the table?" And she's like, "Oh, it costs like $36,000, and Carlos bought it direct from Italy." And they do it right on the table in front of the massive window out into the front of the neighbourhood where anyone could see.
Yeah, and he says, "Do you want to do it on the table this time?" Which implies they've been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
So Gabby has been having an affair with her gardener for a while, who's this really young boy.
Yeah, underage. Underage. He is underage. And he also says, "You know, I really like it when we hook up."
Ugh. But that's pretty much going to be Gabby's story for season one.
He's underage, and I know I shouldn't say it because he's underage, but John is very attractive.
Yeah, but his actor wasn't underage.
The actor wasn't underage. Jesse Metcalf, because I remember I watched it and then followed him immediately on social media because I had the biggest crush on him.
Oh my God.
I haven't seen him in anything else, but he's very handsome.
So, yeah, that's where this episode basically goes with Gabby and him, really, doesn't it? They go to a party at one point, and then Gabby quickly sneaks back to mow the lawn.
Yeah.
So that he won't fire John, which I thought was really strange, because I just thought, how does no one notice that she's not there or that she's just gone?
No one is. Well, Carlos is too busy drinking and hanging around with his workmates and his boss to notice that Gabby is gone. But also, it's the middle of the night and she's there mowing the lawn in a dress.
Gorgeous dress.
An absolute gorgeous dress. But Gabby does just need to learn to sleep with John and send him back to doing his job, because if she'd have just done that, and there's no, like, hanging around for cigarettes and complaining about the husband. It's an affair, Gabby. Just get it done and send him back to do his work, because...
That's the problem. She's so lonely that she's seeking something else in him other than just the sex. Like, she wants to talk to him about this stuff.
Yeah.
So after we find out about the affair, we cut to Bree's house, where Bree's having dinner with her family, yep. Which was... Oh, I hated this scene.
It was actually the very, very first scene filmed. The very first scene of any of the Desperate Housewives.
Oh.
Probably because it was quite a simple scene.
I thought this was really upsetting because... So what happens in this one is... So we get introduced to Bree's family dynamic. So she's basically made this very nice dinner, which she's kind of slaved away making for hours. I believe she said it was a basil puree.
Yeah. Which sounds horrible, no offense.
We call it basil in England, by the way, but a basil puree does not sound appetizing.
No, it doesn't.
So she's been slaving away, making this dinner, and...
She asks Andrew how his meal is, and he says it's okay, and then she's just like, it's okay. And then they start talking, and he starts complaining about how they have to have fine dining and, you know, cuisine. Why can't they just have regular food, like pork and beans? And I'm sorry, but even I want to slap Andrew when he suggested pork and beans.
Then she looks for support from her husband. She's looking for him to stick up for her. And he just says, and she's like, do you have anything to say? And he just says, pass the salt.
Oh my God, don't.
And it's the way he says it as well, because he wasn't even just going, pass the salt. He goes, pass the salt.
It angers me so much. Watching Bree's heart just slowly snap into when her husband can't even stand up for her.
This is mainly where Bree's story is going to go for the season, if I remember rightly. And then we cut to a bit later on, they decide to go to a restaurant instead, because apparently the family are sick of having a lovely home-cooked meal.
They want something fun.
So they cut to this family restaurant. You know the kind of family restaurant where you're sitting around,
it's like,
and then you hear all these kids in the background because it's really loud and you've got all these arcade games?
It's like Frankie and Benny's or like a Harvester.
The kids go off and play games, which wasn't exactly what Bree had planned. But no. Rex was like, no, it's fine, go do it. Who cares? And then as it's just Bree and Rex, he basically tells her that he wants a divorce.
At a restaurant with a salad bar. Oh, and with Bree's line as, I'm not going to discuss the dissolution of my marriage with you in a place where the restrooms are labelled chicks and dudes.
Yes. I couldn't believe how unclassy he was to say that he wants a divorce here, of all places.
But then she poisons him.
Yeah, she makes a salad and puts onions on it, which apparently he's allergic to, and she must have been distracted and forgot when she was talking to Mrs. Huber.
Yeah, Mrs. Huber was distracting her, but in all fairness, with the way he behaved, I'd want to put onions on his salad too.
Mrs. Huber pops up just everywhere in this episode.
She does.
She was there. I was like, wait, you're here now? You're at this restaurant?
She's everywhere. Isn't she? She's at the supermarket with Lynette, which I don't think we've discussed yet. And she's there at the beginning. Like,
yeah, so that happens. And then he goes to the hospital. He's like,
you tried to poison me. Yes, well, I feel badly about that.
Then we get a very revealing scene in the hospital. So Bree goes into the bathroom to freshen up get water for the plants.
Yeah.
And she basically breaks down and starts crying. And Mary Alice very specifically says that no one would ever know, because when she returned, she was perfect.
Yes.
So she composes herself and she comes out of the bathroom and she's totally fine.
Rex basically says that he's fed up of her being this plastic suburban housewife or something along those lines, and you know, her hair doesn't move and she never laughs and she never has fun anymore. And
so that is pretty much Bree in this episode. She very much seems to hold everything in, and
yep,
that's her character as of yet. Next character is Lynette,
yep,
I believe. So she's looking after all of her kids, which looks like absolute chaos. She's just trying to, I think she was trying to cook a meal or make something. She ends up covered in peaches.
Oh, she's feeding her baby.
Oh, yes.
She's feeding her baby and she gets like the baby flicks food on her.
So she's doing that. She gets covered in peaches.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tom, her husband, comes home and starts kissing her, takes her upstairs. This is probably the warmest husband moment that we have in the episode, because he comes home and he's really loving and they both say they love each other. after he proceeds to take to the bedroom for a bit of fun.
Tom, yeah, he is portrayed as probably the nicest husband when you compare him to Carlos and Rex.
Yeah, I think,
obviously, but
it's shown that they have pretty much the strongest marriage out of all of the other ones so far.
Oh yes, definitely.
The most solid one where there is still love there. There's the scene where she goes shopping with the kids.
Yes, yeah, she goes shopping with the kids. There is a character who she meets in the shop and she's like, don't you just love being a mom? Really, most people feel like they have to say.
Yeah, because that was what Mary Alice was saying as the narration. She was saying that the lady asked her how it was to basically have quit the job and become a stay-at-home mum, when if she stayed at the company, she'd probably be running it by now. And she was basically saying that Lynette was probably thinking, not so much really. But yeah, because there's this expectation from society, she pretty much just has to say the only acceptable response, which is, yeah, it's great.
It's the best job I've ever had.
And that's pretty much most of what we get from Lynette in this episode. So we get basically the idea that she's the stay-at-home mum. We also get some time with Paul Young in this episode, who's another character, not one of the main four. He's Mary Alice's husband. They've also got a son together called Zach Young. It's nighttime, and Zach Young's in bed, woken up by a sound from outside. And when he goes to investigate, he finds his dad digging a hole through hard ground with a pickaxe. And it cuts up to the shot of Zach Young looking very confused and scared, looking down at his dad.
Do we see what the point of that is yet?
No, we don't. It's very mysterious. So all we see is that he's burying a hole.
He's digging a hole.
Digging a hole, sorry. Yeah, he's digging this hole. And I was like, this is mysterious.
So from the get-go, pretty much, we can already see that Paul's quite a shady character.
Very mysterious. Who's left? So we've got Susan.
Yep, we've got Susan. She's met Mike already at the wake, but then she re-goes over to his place to basically introduce herself properly without a mac and cheese. And then at the same time, Edie turns up and Edie and Mike meet. And then Edie's like, oh, Mike, I hear you're a plumber. And then that's the minute we start to see she also likes Mike and Edie knows how to play the game. Fast forward a little bit further in Susan's story. And then she speaks to Mrs. Huber at the store. She starts talking about how she had the worst mac and cheese at the wake and it's just running through her. And then she stops her and says, I'll be taking care of Edie's son tonight because she's entertaining into the wee hours. And Susan starts to panic.
Susan's under the impression that Edie and Mike are basically spending the night together. Cut to a bit later in her story where she goes over there with an empty glass measuring jug because she says that she's going over there to borrow some sugar.
Yeah.
And she essentially breaks into Edie's house. I mean, he wasn't locked or anything, but she just walks in and finds all of Edie's clothes and lingerie all over the floor with all of these lit candles while Edie's upstairs doing her entertaining with this guy. And I don't know why Susan does this, but out of her sense of defeat, she throws some underwear.
Steals the chocolate first.
Does she?
Yeah, she picks up a chocolate and bites into it miserably.
And then she throws the underwear, which catches on fire, and then it catches the curtains on fire.
Yeah.
And within minutes, the whole front room's on fire, and she drops her empty glass measuring jug, and she's out of there. I mean, she tries to put it out a bit first, in all fairness.
She does it miserably.
She does a terrible job.
I know you're very passionate about Susan being, like, so awful for, you know, setting fire to Edie's house or whatever.
We haven't said that yet, but we'll get there.
She's sort of bringing it on herself for leaving that many unattended candles lit lying around. But Susan really doesn't help.
Victim shame.
I'm not victim shaming. You're talking to me like it's some sort of assault.
Susan's the one that set her house on fire.
Susan is the one that set her house on fire, but how do you know that it wasn't going to happen already?
I don't, but the point
exactly
is that it didn't happen that way. Susan did it.
But Susan makes it worse because she throws the wine, alcohol,
on the
fire, and then it goes all further up. She tries to put it out with red wine, I think it is.
Oh, that's what she threw.
And then she picks up the dude's jeans, and she's, like, batting the fire out, and then she sets fire to the jeans, and then she throws the jeans to the other side of the room, which sets fire to the other side of the room.
After this happens, obviously, a fire truck gets called out, and all of the ladies are on the street just talking, gossiping about it. So the main four are talking about it. Susan's basically looking very guilty and upset because she set fire to this house. And the other girls, they're asking, like, Susan, are you okay? And she says, oh, I just feel bad for Edie. To which Bree says, she's a strong woman. She'll be okay. She'll get by. We all do. Which I thought was very nice.
Well, I put that it sums up the episode perfectly, because Lynette goes, she'll find a way to survive, and then Bree just sort of mutters to herself, we all do, and I just think it that sums it. Up the series itself.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good interaction. And then what happens after that is Mike comes up and stands next to Susan in the street, and Susan basically realises that it wasn't Mike that was in the house, because he's just walked up and doesn't know what's happening.
Yes.
So she basically burnt down the house for nothing. When I saw this, I'm watching it again, I realised this is the start of some of the evil actions that Susan got.
Oh my god!
So far, it's only the pilot episode, but we've got breaking and entering, arson.
Admittedly, I did give Susan my worst mum award of the episode. But only because we didn't talk about this scene. She pretends to have a clogged pipe to get Mike over and away from Edie, because Edie's over at Mike's house. And then Susan's like, I have a clog. And then she tries to force the drain to be blocked for when Mike comes over. And she uses the ice lolly sticks, I'm so American, that her daughter was using to make the horse for a school project to block the drain, and that is just bad parenting.
Oh my god, I completely forgot about that. I wrote down that she definitely has some artistic talent like her mum, which was a nice touch.
Oh yeah, do you know what, the amount of times I've watched Desperate Housewives and I've never even clocked that.
So after Mike and Susan have this conversation, and I've established that Susan is evil, we cut to this scene where Mike is on the phone with someone.
Yeah, he's back in his house.
We don't know who he's talking to, because you can't hear the person on the other end. It's not edited that way. And then he pulls a gun out and puts it on the table, and this music starts playing. So we know that Mike is also being a bit suspicious here. Yeah. And then at the end of the story, the four housewives are cleaning out Mary Alice's house, like getting rid of her clothes and stuff like that. Oh yeah, so they find the note which Mary Alice had at the beginning of the show, which made her shoot herself.
I know what you did. It makes me sick. I'm going to tell. Mm. It's really quite lucky that the girls decided to just start going through Mary Alice's mail.
You know, I never even thought of that, but you are right. It's really bizarre. But the plot demands it.
The plot thickens.
So they found it. So that's basically the end of episode one, pilot. So before we move on to some of the last segments, do you have any more fun trivia?
Yes. So it took 13 days to film the pilot completely from beginning to end. The envelope that Mary Alice got with the letter on it actually is addressed to Secretsville and not Fairview.
Ooh.
The gown that Gabby wears when she's mowing the lawn, trying to, like, in the middle of the night, was loaned to a Philadelphia high schooler. I'm not quite sure what her name was, because she asked to see the photo of it so that she could replicate it for her prom dress, and instead they just sent it. And it still apparently had the grass on it.
It still apparently
had the grass on it. And most people might remember or recognise the set from the Nelly and Kelly Rowland song Dilemma. No matter what I do.
Wisteria Lane.
Yeah, so that song is used, or that set, sorry, is used in that song.
So whose house was Nelly and Kelly in?
I don't know whose house they were in, but you should. If I can picture it correctly, you should be able to see Gabby's house in the background.
Okay, because they had
there was a porch, and then there's scenes where they're dancing on the street, and then the more commonly remembered scene of when she's trying to text Nelly back on Microsoft Excel.
that's a really good trivia fact. Good job. Now we're going to move on to our last segment, which we call Joel's pick for best outfit. So I'm just going to take over to you and let you do your thing. So
yes, so I'm just gonna go with the outfit that Gabby was wearing when she went to the party, the one that she mowed the lawn in and was sent to that lucky Philadelphia teen that got to wear it for prom.
It was a really gorgeous dress. If anyone wants to message us or contact us, what socials do we have, Joel? Where can they find us?
Yes, we have Boyfriends Review on Instagram, and we have BFs, so BFS Review on Twitter. Those are our Twitter and our Instagram handles. Our artwork is done by Doc Red Monk, so that is his Instagram handle, so you should be able to find him on there. And from his Instagram, you should be able to go onto his Etsy account as well, where you can purchase some of his digital artwork, and he does commissions.
You can also email us at boyfriendsreview@outlook.com. Do feel free to join us next week, where we will be reviewing episode 2, but underneath. And I'm going to be doing the trivia for that one.
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed.
Thank you for listening. Hopefully we haven't bored you.
Thank you. Yeah, we will see you next week. And do feel free to message us on any of our socials. And definitely go over to Louis' page, Doc Red Monk, for some really fabulous artworks.
Yes.
Thank you. See you next week.
See you next week, guys. Bye.